Okay, hello and welcome everybody. This is Mary Elizabeth Bradford. I'm known as the Career Artisan, and I am so excited about our coaching call today. I'm going to be sharing with you all types of tips and strategies for working with recruiters and helping them bring you more job leads. So I'm approaching this from a career management perspective, not as somebody that is only actively in a job search, because there are lots and lots of ways to work with recruiters when you are in a passive search. In fact, that's the best way to work with recruiters. So I'm approaching things from that perspective, and we can just take a look at how to really massage those relationships for yourself long term so they're always paying off for you. And what this will mean is hopefully less time job searching and more time helping them understand exactly where you want to go so you can vet opportunities from them periodically throughout your career. A little bit about me. I'm going to assume at this point most people on this call know something about me, but I think the most important thing to know is that I started out 17 years ago as an executive recruiter, built my own very successful firm in Nashville, and I worked in primarily the construction and real estate development industry on the commercial side, but I also worked with architects, engineers, and a little bit in the entertainment industry, in the film industry too, because of, you know, being in Nashville. So I come from that background, and then after that, I was a very high-level job search coach for 8 years, and of course now, and in that time around 2006 is when I became certified, got multiple certifications with our top association, Career Directors International. So I have this combination of experience that gives me a unique value proposition to my clients from really a opposite, boots on the ground, that I've really been in the trenches with executive job seekers from soup to nuts and know exactly, you know, the types of things that take place and the struggles and some of the challenges when you're in that type of a career transition. But primarily from a recruiter's perspective, what I really want to explain to you is what it's like in the recruiter's shoes, so that you can better understand how to work with them and build relationships with them so it benefits you and them, which benefits you. So, first thing is, let's see, I had several bullet points that I wanted to cover. So I'll start with the bullet points, and then some of you had emailed me some questions, and I'll go ahead at the end of this and answer some questions that were sent to me. So first of all, working with recruiters, how to get them to call you back. There are several ways, and I'm going to sort of piecemeal this together because obviously it's just one big long story, but from a perspective of how to get recruiters to call you back, there's several ways to do that. You can send out a mass distribution to a really good list. A lot of my clients will pay me, it's $349, or it's part of a resume package, to send their resume out to a list of, I have a database of about 18,000 recruiters. And we won't send it to all 18,000, but I'll categorize based on that my client's area of expertise, and then it may go out to anywhere from 600 to 2,500 of those recruiters, either in the United States or Canada or internationally, other places. So if you're doing that, then that's one way to get the recruiters to call you back, by just mass emailing them, and you know you're going to get a certain percentage of those recruiters responding to you. So mass distribution is one way. The second way is sort of taking a step back and using the list that I'm giving you with this call. Either, you know, call them first or send them your resume first and follow up with a phone call. Now, this is more time-consuming, but obviously it's at a lower price point. So, you know, you're always balanced. It's either going to be time or money. So in this case, you know, it would be good if you were strategically, you had more time, or you were in a passive job search and you had the time to maybe just reach out and start to build those relationships two or three a week or more, whatever is suitable for you. And it really doesn't matter, I don't think, whether you call them first or send them your resume first, because in this list that I'm giving you, and I'll go through it in a moment, I'm giving you actual contact names and industry specifications, very specific information. So you can literally cherry pick handfuls of recruiters that match your skills and expertise that you want to reach out to. I would say that the only point would be of consideration would be that if you were in a highly confidential job search, if you send your resume first and then follow up with recruiters, you know, there's that slight chance that maybe they'll miss something or they didn't read your cover letter, and maybe they, you know, zing that off to a company just sort of figuring, you know, you sent them your resume, so it's kind of, at that point, you're not really giving them express permission to do it, and it's kind of a no-no in the industry to send a long resume without permission, but to say it never happens would be probably not accurate. So if you're in a highly confidential job search, you probably want to call them first. Another way to get recruiters to call you back as sort of a quality control element to this is to make sure that you match up your skills and industry with their specialty for best results. In other words, you know, you could call 50 recruiters, but if you're in product development for consumer goods and only 15 of those recruiters work in consumer goods product development, you probably should have only sent your resume to those 15. There's always exceptions. There's always somebody that, you know, I specialized in construction, but, you know, I might have somebody that needs something that's completely outside of construction, that maybe in marketing, you know, for magazines or something, and they just, for whatever reason, they need that type of person, or, you know, they need someone to run their nonprofit programs nationwide, then you would probably want to look at a parallel market. But those would be the exception, not the rule. Generally, recruiters are going to be straight down the middle. If they deal in construction, you're a construction executive, boy, that's who you should call. And so that's a good distilling of that exercise, is just pick the recruiters that specialize in your industry or your position. And then you don't have to worry about geography, because recruiters primarily are industry specific. So they're going to have clients everywhere. So, for example, when I was a recruiter, I had commercial contractors all throughout the Southeast. And, you know, some of them were in Nashville, yes, but it certainly wasn't a prerequisite. And a lot of times the office I work for initially might be in Nashville, but then they had a need out in California for their offices in Atlanta. So don't worry about where they're at. Two places never to look for, or that it's not necessary in the career services industry to look for people in your backyard, are resume writers and recruiters. You don't need to worry about where they are. You just need to worry about what they do and what they specialize in. And, of course, for resume writers, what their credentials are. So, and I'm just going down some quick bullet points here, just trying to stick with the theme of each question. So bear with me if I haven't gotten to what you specifically want to hear yet. Generally, if you send them something via email, and you could certainly send them, hard mail, I'll give you the pros and cons of that. If you send them an email, send them your resume in PDF. They may come back and ask for a Word version of your resume. They may come back and ask you to upload your resume in their database and fill out a form on their website. And that only is getting more and more prevalent because, you know, that's their content management system. So what happens is they want to have a big CMS so that when they are keyword searching for people like you, they have a whole list that comes up. It just makes their process so much more efficient, since they're in the connect the dots game of matching companies and candidates. So don't be offended if they say, well, you know, submit to our database. A lot of times they just want you in there so you can be considered for all the positions they have that you might be a good match for. But send them, a resume in PDF, because even if they have a Mac and you have a PC, they're going to open up that PDF resume, and it's going to look beautiful. Also, if you send them a PDF, you know, versus Word, there's less chance, you know, it's a bug or something like that. Now, speaking of bugs, if you do email them, it would behoove you to maybe cut and paste your resume below your email just in case they don't want to open up an attachment from you. They can scroll down and see, you know, it's legit. So that's another way to do it. You can certainly take and cut and paste a Word copy and then sort of shore it up if you want. Or I have a resume class, and this is sort of outside of this particular topic, but you can save your resume as an ASCII text file, a plain text document, and it's ASCII text. And then that is something that's stripped of all symbolism. You just go in and take out any symbolism that might have gotten changed to question marks and clean it up a little bit. And then you can have something that's plain, but that's nice that you can cut and paste to an email that's going to show up pretty much in an okay-looking form. So just a couple tips there on emailing. Some emails don't get opened. You know, just like some phone calls don't get answered. So email, it does work, but, you know, there's two sides to every one of these methods that we use, whatever medium. Hard mail works. The good part about it is your competition probably isn't going to be hard mailing a bunch of resumes to recruiters. So that makes you stand out. So when people talk about even in IT and high tech, you know, oh, sending things hard mail is dead. You know, the truth of the matter is that's brilliant marketing. Every good marketer is doing what no one else is doing because you want to capture as much attention as you can. So emailing or hard mailing a resume is about as, I don't know, antiquated as a birthday card. I mean, it's just a nice touch. It's also nice to give somebody more of a sensory impression, because a resume on nice paper that looks beautiful is something they can touch and feel and look at. And so it's almost like, you know, they explain video online. You know, they always say, have a video. If you can have a video of yourself, that's the best. And the next best is having an audio of your voice. And the next best is having a picture of yourself. Well, the only reason why these are ranking in those orders is because there's more sensory involvement with the video than anything else. You can click on a video and see the person and hear the person and watch their mannerisms. You get a sense of who they are, and so you can connect with them from one human to another much more quickly. And also, I think people feel that they can ascertain whether that individual is worth calling back or not. You know, and so anyway, it works along those same lines. So figuring that your competition isn't going to be hard mailing their resume a lot. If you have, let's say, you're a top executive and you want to mail your resume to the top 10 firms, Battaglia and Korn Ferry and all these big firms, it might be worth it to get a really nice executive, you know, envelope and beautiful paper and, you know, get it to the printer and print it out and send these out in the nicest way. I think it's always good to make the best professional impression that you can, when you can. So those are some pros and cons. You know, the cons of the hard mailing are it's laborious, it's time-consuming, and it also still might get circumvented by someone's secretary and might not get read. So you have to decide, or maybe try both and see which one works for you for your particular situation. So same thing with calling. You know, obviously, if you did a mass distribution through my company, you're not going to follow up on with every one of those recruiters. But if you had a top 10 or a top, even, you know, top 50, it takes us, you know, if you may be on the phone with a recruiter for 20 minutes, but chances are it's going to be a couple minutes. So if you called 3 or 4, 5 people a week, a couple minute conversations each, or leaving a nice voicemail or whatever it happens to be, you can get a lot done in a pretty quick period of time, whether you're in a job search or not. So it takes more time to call, but it's worth it. And why is it worth it? Well, I think it's best explained in an example. When I used to be a recruiter, and this is when we used fax machines a lot. So I would get a faxed copy of somebody's resume, and they'd tell me how interested they were in speaking with me and how qualified they were as a construction executive. No phone call. So my impression is, well, either these people think that they're too good to call, or their qualifications are just so hot that it's me that should be scrambling to pick up the phone and call them, or they just really don't care. Neither, you know, there were, so none of those are good. Those are good impressions. So even if it's just the act of following up with a phone call and saying, you know, hey, John, I you know, this is Mary Elizabeth. I just wanted you to put a voice to the resume. I sent you my resume, or, you know, I wanted to follow up with a phone call. That's the professional, buttoned-up way to do things. Only takes a couple minutes. You're not really caring at that point whether the recruiter is available, whether they're rude to you, whether they're nice to you. You're just following the cadence that you know with consistency is going to be the best formula for success. And that's pretty much the long and short of it. So when you get them on the phone, you want to have what you are going to say written out. So first of all, let's talk about what happens. They may answer the phone if they're a small outfit. If they're a big outfit, maybe they'll have an executive answering their phones for them. So if the executive answers or the assistant answers the phone, you want to ask for the recruiter that you're calling for. And if you don't know the name, then say, may I speak to somebody one of your recruiters, the person that's in charge of, you know, blank industry. So it's the recruiter that specializes in your industry. So in general operation searches or construction searches or your healthcare searches, because they'll, if they're a bigger outfit, they'll have their recruiters sectioned out like that. And one will handle one thing and one will handle another thing. And sometimes it'll be like a recruiter will specialize in outside directorships, or one recruiter will specialize in C-level searches. But most of the time you'll find they'll specialize in an industry niche. So anyway, hopefully the assistant will be able to get you where you want to go. And when you get them on the phone, you want to have what you're going to say written out. So if it might sound something like this. If you sent your resume to them, you might say, hi, this is, you know, Mary Elizabeth. Hi, this is Mary Elizabeth. John, I sent you my resume, or I sent in my resume last week, and I wanted to follow up with a phone call to briefly introduce myself and to find out if you have any open searches in the blank industry, the career services industry, that I might be a good potential candidate for. And that is really all you have to say. And I'll get into this a little bit later on in the call, why that's all you have to say. But basically what you want to do is, if you can, stand up, take a deep breath, smile, and because that energy is heard. They want to hear that you are a professional. It's great if a candidate comes across well on the phone, because any good recruiter knows right off the bat that person's going to show well. And that's super important to the recruiters. And I'll, again, get into that, why that is in a minute. If you haven't sent them your resume, then maybe you say something like this. Hi, this is Mary Elizabeth, John, and I'm a career services expert and a resume writer, and I'm calling to introduce myself. I'm in a highly confidential career transition. You could say that if it's confidential. And if you are in a confidential career transition, you do want to start the conversation off by letting them know that. If you're not, you don't have to say that. I'm in a career search. I wanted to reach out to you personally because I understand you specialize in my industry. So having said that, may I send you my resume? And if so, I welcome a confidential conversation if you feel that I'm a good match for any of your open searches. Or I could say something like, I'm a career services expert, and I've been doing this for 17 years, and because you specialize in placing career services executives at universities, I'm thinking that I'm probably a pretty strong match for some of your open searches. So let's talk. Love to speak with you. So they're looking for, you want to sound like a happy person, you want to sound like a professional person, you want to have what you're saying, you know, somewhat buttoned up, and they're going to be listening for that. That's going to make a favorable impression on them. And even if you say this on an email, or I'm sorry, on a voicemail, that's fine too, because what I just said, any one of those, either one of those two scripts is under 30 seconds. And that's basically you want to keep your voicemails fairly short. Don't ramble on and then say, I'm here this week. Here's my number, 830-331-9398. Thanks so much. I look forward to speaking with you. Don't say I'll try to call you back later, because then they'll just wait for you to call back. Just sound like a happy, confident person. And your goal when you're doing this in the beginning, these introductions, is very short-sighted, and that's that I want to make a good first impression. I want to sound like someone that this recruiter should be interested in speaking with. So that's a very fairly easy goal. And then you're either going to have a good resume to send them, or you're going to follow up and send them a good resume and do whatever they want you to do, again, in terms of database submission and things like that. So let's move on to talking about understanding what motivates recruiters to pitch you their best client company openings. Hang on one second. I just want to see. Oh, my goodness. There are tons of people on this call. That's great. Okay, so what motivates recruiters to pitch you their best client company openings? Basically, the long and short of it is you want to be the candidate that matches their industry and position hotspot. If you're that guy or gal, you've got it going on. And so if you're looking to change industries, if you're looking to up-level your position, if you have been in a long job search, if you have anything that sort of dings you, your better bet is going after the hidden job market and understanding how to use other methods. And there's lots of other methods besides recruiters to, vet quality positions. But recruiters are basically looking for that round peg and round hole. And in order to really understand this, you have to see it through a recruiter's eyes. So basically, how recruiters work is, the recruiter generally they either do contingent searches or retained searches, which means a client's going to, when I was a recruiter, they'd either pay me and put me on a search, and they wouldn't put any other recruiters on a search. They wouldn't take any other outside candidates. They'd filter everything through me. They wanted me to handle it, in other words. A contingency search, I might get a call from a construction company, Mary Elizabeth, we don't want to retain you for this, but gosh, if you find any good senior project managers that know how to build hospitals over $100 million, please don't forget about us. Please send those people our way first before you send them somewhere else. And then I would work out my contingency or my retained fee with those companies. And generally how it works, it still works this way in the industry, as I understand it, is you're going to be somewhere around the 20% to 30% range of the candidate's first year's salary. So some, go 15 in a bad market. Usually 20 to 30 is the average. So if my candidate gets a job offer for $100,000, I'm going to get $30,000. So that puts a lot of pressure on the recruiter to do certain things. One of them is to bring the company exactly who they have told me they need, right down to the color of their hair. Because if I go outside of what they've shared with me, I'm going to look incompetent, and they're going to raise their eyebrows like, gosh, there's other recruiters besides you, Mary Elizabeth, that we can call to get this done. So the recruiters are also dealing with their own set of pressure, and that's that you as a candidate, it's your job to make them look good so that they can call their company and say, oh, my gosh, Ben, I just found the most awesome woman. You are going to love her. She was a controller for such and such a company. She's been in this industry for 15 years. I can't wait to get her in there to interview with you. Her personality is fantastic. She's got a beautiful resume, great track record. And so now the recruiter's getting the company all excited and jazzed about this candidate. And so if they can't, what they can't do generally, unless they really, I mean, there's always exceptions. You know, maybe I've been working with someone for a long time. I go, look, I want you to give this guy a shot. He's going to be great. I know he's not exactly in the industry, but boy, I would really have to put my, you know, lay it on the line and sort of open myself up to a little bit of risk if I wanted to really push a candidate in there that didn't have matching qualifications. What really is my motivation? Sometimes it's the right thing to do. And when I was a recruiter, when I saw a match there and I felt like I needed to push it, I would do that because it felt like ethically that was the right way to go. But I certainly wasn't going to bring in someone that the problem is, you know, when you bring in someone, you go, well, I found this project manager, but he hasn't built any hospitals. He basically just built elementary schools for the last 20 years. Well, my client's going to say, what's wrong with you? That's cool. We don't need anyone that builds at elementary schools. Yeah, but he's a project manager. So that's how you get fired as a recruiter. But the other thing, too, is if people are in a job search when a recruiter brings them to the company, it's not that that person isn't ultra-qualified or maybe even the perfect candidate. It's a stigma of the client feeling like, well, if he was in a job search, I could have found him myself. You see, so it's not fair, it's not right, it's just the way that it works in that particular, you know, world. And so there are only certain, you know, the stars have to line up in a certain way for recruiters and you to be right for each other. So it's important to know this so you don't waste your time. There might be some job searches, you just got to go it alone because you're going to get much better interviews, much better offers. You're going to have a lot more success and get things done faster by doing things, you know, without recruiters. Other times, if you are the guy or the gal for the job, recruiters can bring you a lot of leads. So be the candidate that matches their industry and position hotspot. Have excellent marketing materials and learn how to interview so they don't have to train you. They want you to come to the table prepared. It helps them. It makes you look awesome. And if you have a really, really strong resume, they'll just love that. It's just anything you can do to increase your value in their eyes and help them pitch you to that client company. And then, you know, in terms of interviewing, fascinating. You know, still to this day, I talk with so many brilliant executives. It's a real honor to talk with people. I had a client, I have a client right now that was an astronaut. I have people that are construction executives and manufacturing executives, and it's really interesting. Some people know how to interview and what to say on the phone, and some don't. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with their brilliance or their intelligence. It's just one of those areas where if you're in a job search, I mean, at some point we should all learn what to say and what to do kind of from a self-marketing perspective that's going to give us the most leverage so that we keep the recruiter or the key decision maker's mind on the value you bring to the table and nothing else. We don't want them thinking about red flags. We don't need to tell them that you'll travel anywhere but your wife and children need to stay in Arizona. We don't need to tell them that you need to make $350,000 or else it's not going to be worth it to talk to you or you don't want to talk to anyone. Sometimes things like this, like we have to have discernment and we have to be careful. And I think a good touchstone is just to realize that when you're speaking with recruiters, it's a very safe bet, even if the recruiter's buddy-buddy with you, even if you've known them for years, to treat them as if you were interviewing with a company because the recruiter works for the company. So they might like you. They might want to help you, but it's not their job to. So the best thing you can do to them, for them, and so you can leverage them, is to be prepared, buttoned up, know what to say. They're going to love that. So sound and act professional on the phone and in person. Everything from, you know, how you sound to the suit or the dress, you know, outfit that you're wearing in there. Just understand the basics of it there, of what looks good. And if you fall short in an area, get someone to help you. I'd like to think I am, but I'm not a good designer. I'm picky, but not a good, I'm not good at putting outfits together and things like that. And, you know, so I'm all about that. I totally understand. So when I have to do something that involves me looking a certain way, I ask my husband or I ask a friend that has really good fashion sense. I do not depend on myself anymore. I am just too old to make stupid mistakes and worry about it for 4 days before the event. So anyway, get help. Like, know at some point, you know, okay, I got a hole there. I'm going to bring someone in to help me fill it. You'll make your life much easier, too, and then you won't make mistakes that, you know, end up being, quote-unquote, learning experiences. So understand, too, when you're trying to get recruiters to pitch you to their companies, that if you say something to a recruiter, if you say something in an interview that sounds like an alarm to the client company will typically tell the recruiter, and then the recruiter may or may not divulge this to you because it's a slippery slope. It might be a liability. I'll give you a few examples of things that happened to me, too, when I was a recruiter, and I think these are fairly good examples. So why do they do this? Because they're confiding in one another, and so it's important to remember moving forward. Don't act like you don't trust them. Just understand what side the allegiance falls on. So when I was recruiting for a very, very big, one of the world's top commercial construction firms, I worked right with the president, and I would bring him in. I would bring in people for them constantly because they were growing when I was working with them. They were in their heyday. And I remember one guy I brought in, super duper, great qualifications, everything was fine. The president, you know, I followed up after the interview. I wasn't there in the interview. And I said, "Well, how'd it go, Russ?" And he said, "Are you kidding?" And I said, "I'm sorry." And he said, "Mary Elizabeth, I wouldn't send that guy into any more interviews." And I was mortified. You know, I said, "Well, why? What happened?" And he said, "Mary Elizabeth, that man is a total malcontent." Now, you can imagine, no, first of all, you know, whatever the guy said in the interview was not what he said to me, but rather fascinating. Several different things. But he could say one thing to me and another thing in an interview with the president of this company that would leave that kind of impression. Now, as a recruiter, do I go and tell the candidate, "Oh, by the way, the president said that, you know, you were a person that just seemed like a person filled with discontent in your life"? I mean, I can't. What am I going to say? So I can't say anything. I can only say, you know, I think he's going to go with the other candidate. I had another guy, awesome, wonderful, one of the top project managers probably in the United States for what he did. Again, both these people were qualified. This is personality stuff. I called after the interview, another interview I was in. Sometimes I couldn't or wouldn't go to them. And talked to the president, and I said, "Well, are you going to, you know, what do you think? Are you going to hire him?" I thought it was just a shoo-in. I wasn't even thinking about it at all because it was such a perfect match. And he said, "I'm not going to hire him. I feel bad for him, but I'm not going to hire him." I said, "What are you talking about? He's perfect for your such-and-such division." He said, "The guy is still licking his wounds from his other company. What happened there, that's pretty much, we spent the entire interview talking about how terrible his other company was and rehashing over what happened." And, you know, because it was sort of a peer-to-peer, the guy was a very high-level executive. again, the guy was a really high-level executive. Never would have thought in a million years he would have gone in there and, you know, basically in stuck mode, laid it all out on the line to the president of this other company where he could have gotten an awesome job. But he did, and so he didn't get that position either. And that was a terrible, because that would have been perfect for him. They were really right for each other. But he made a really bad first impression. Third guy I came, again, this is personality. Third guy, one of the hottest healthcare senior project managers, vice president level, in maybe in the world at the time, just had built, you know, the most prestigious hospitals. Came in with such a chip on his shoulder because I was the recruiter. I recruited him for this very high-level position. And the president of the company is humming and hawing about making him an offer. And he said, Mary Elizabeth, do you really think this guy wants the job? Do you think, honestly, do you think he wants the job? So these are the behind, just a snippet of the behind-the-scenes conversations. The man was so, I don't know, maybe arrogant, I'm not exactly sure, but he did not talk about the value he brought. He didn't say he was excited, he didn't say he wanted the job. He left the president not even really knowing if he should make him an offer or not. Fascinating. But important to understand that, too, when I was recruiting and I would get these searches from executives, they'd be going down their laundry list of things that they wanted, and they say, and you know, we probably, the guy or gal should have 10 or 15 years of experience and thus and so, and this certification, and I don't know, you know, I think a salary range would be anywhere between 125 and 225, just depending on the person. 125 and 225. So there's a $100,000 gap there that candidate could fall anywhere within, and that is a very good thing to understand, and we'll talk about that too in a minute, about what you say about money, because if you say 100 and you're making 100 and you'd like to have 105, then even though they could offer you two, you're probably going to get 105. So there are things you can do to hedge against that, but what kind of offer? I just remembered thinking, you know, he got a $100,000 difference here in the salary that he could offer this individual. What kind of offer is he going to get if the president doesn't even know if the guy wants a job? Probably not very well. And I had another, and this person wasn't brought in through a recruiter, but because this person was an attorney, and then they were thinking about, they wanted to go into healthcare risk management, use some of their legal skills in that role, but certainly didn't have the exact alignment of expertise. They ended up interviewing, due to some networking and informational interviews, for a risk management job, and they won that job out over two other risk managers that were already with local hospitals. And on the first day of her employment, the development manager for these assisted living facilities sat her down and said, you know, and they were talking, he said, do you know why we hired you over those other two ladies? And she said, no. And he said, because you were the only one that said you wanted the job and that you were excited. So very interesting. So much of this, once you're qualified, is personality, and it's really important that we are giving the right personality, you know, the right perception to the recruiter and the right perception to the company. Because it really pays off. It literally can pay off. Okay, so rehearse your interviews. Understand what the right and wrong things to say are. Speak to the recruiter professionally. Try not to confide, even if you're pressed or your buddies with the recruiter, in understanding that really they're not working for you, they're working for the company. So how to quickly ascertain if you are a good fit for recruiters or not. Remembering that in a recruiter's world, they're charging a lot and they have to justify their fee with the best candidates, which is a lot like human resources where, you know, there's a little bit different, you know, because they're basically trying to sort of cull the best candidates from information that is aggregated systematically in a software program, you know, ATS software, and they're trying to, you know, fill positions that are open. And recruiters, in a sense, are doing that too, external recruiters. I'm talking about the difference between external recruiters and human resources, or recruiters internally and human resources. But often recruiters are hired to remembering this because they save the company time, and also the company might have a difficult search and they're trying to pawn it off on a recruiter. So remember, just like difficult candidates, there's difficult positions. There's positions that have high burnout or that are really difficult or for whatever reason. And so, you know, it works sort of, you know, from all angles. But at the end of the day, they're looking for, from a good candidate, what I would call star quality status. And star quality status pretty much encompasses the same thing. It's pretty evergreen. No more than 3 jobs in 10 years. The ideal candidate, a solid academic record with a college degree, successful in the industry the recruiter specializes in, so you match up, and someone obviously that has had achievements and accomplishments in their industry that can demonstrate it. Secondarily, does the person look good? Do they have a good personality? Or do they express themselves well in interviews? Are they going to show well, in other words? Are they excited about the company? So this is pretty much, if you fall outside of this, if you fall outside of this in a recruiter's world, then it's going to be, you know, probably it's best to look for other opportunities outside of just working with executive recruiters. Okay, so where to find recruiters? This list that I found that I created for you is over 200 recruiters, and I just grabbed one of them so I could give you. This is really, really nice. A really detailed overview of these recruiting firms. So it has the name of the firm, the phone number, the fax number, the email, their website, the level they handle, meaning they handle searches over $100,000 up, or they handle searches over $50,000 up, and they're speaking in terms of salary there. And then it gives a little blurb on what the company does and what they specialize in. You know, that it'll say this firm specializes in the following industries: consumer goods, financial services, manufacturing, packaged goods, retail trade, sports. And then it gives contact names, not just one, but several in most cases. So, and it'll say who's in charge of what. So Bill Smith might be the executive for high technology searches. That's that recruiter's segment. So now you have the phone number, you know who to call, and what I would do, if it were me, is I would go down that whole entire list with a highlighter. I'd print it out, go through it with the highlighter, and then make sure that you come up with an A list or a top list of people that you can begin to call, and then ask for these individuals directly. So this is a wonderful list. It hopefully will make your life so much easier. I'm also providing it to you in Excel spreadsheet format, just in case for those of you that know how to or want to do some type of an email blast. Just be sure if you do it through your email that you don't email more than 20 recruiters at a time. Otherwise, your email service provider might ding it as spam. So, either way. Okay. Other ways to find recruiters. Hang on, I'm just going back up to my notes to understand where I was. Okay. Other ways to find recruiters. You can certainly Google recruiters. So, for example, sometimes just when I'm doing a little extra research for a client, I might say recruiters plus aerospace and just start to go down that list and see if I can find some top firms. And the reason I do that, even though I have lists from other sources and areas, is because no list is going to be complete, and I really don't want to miss anything. So it's always good to look at 2 or 3 sources before you, you know, throw in the towel. So you might Google your area of specialty. You might use this list I'm going to give you. you might look at a recruiting association, or, for example, thereileyguide.com is a good place where it's all things career, and Margaret updates this list meticulously. And so you'll find lists upon lists and resources of recruiter associations and places to find recruiters, and some are free and some are paid. So that's another place. You know what else you could do that would be pretty cool would be go to Google Maps. And if you're looking in a particular area, just come up with a map of the United States and try this for fun. Just put recruiters plus whatever your industry is, medical device sales, or recruiters plus healthcare, or recruiters plus transportation. Whatever it is for you, and see what firms come up. And then just for fun, if you live in Atlanta, Georgia, key in your zip code, and then right over the cursor, once Google Maps hones in on your location, put recruiters plus, or just recruiters, and it'll come up with all the recruiting firms there in Atlanta. It's really cool, Google Maps. I use this for everything. So that's another way to do it. And a third way to do this, of course, is LinkedIn. And you can find recruiters on LinkedIn. And one of the questions that was sent to me this morning was asking all about LinkedIn. So I'll just use this opportunity to share that with everybody now. And the question is, how? And this is from, I realize that there's other resume writers on this call, which is great. Thank you so much. And I hope I'm not telling you everything you already know. But how does LinkedIn play into the job seeker search for recruiters and recruiter search for candidates? I don't have all the answers here, but I can tell you this, that when I optimize, a little insider secret here, when I optimize my clients' LinkedIn profiles, I actually go and research recruiters or private equity firms or key players in their industries for them, and I hand them or email them, I hand them that contact's LinkedIn profile, and I say, please invite these people to your network, and please, you know, and here's what I did and here's why I did it, so that you can carry forward my work and continue to strategically build your network. And the reason why this is important is because when recruiters are keyword searching for people like you, if you are connected to them, you will come up, as I understand it, in their first page search results. But if you're not networked to them, then you won't, or you'll come up lower ranking. So two very important things on LinkedIn, keyword optimization and being connected to the right people. So if you are in the aviation industry and your desire is to stay in the aviation industry, then it is incumbent for you to go find as many recruiters as humanly possible on LinkedIn and make sure that you are connected to them. Okay, so first of all, I would go into my settings and I would uncheck the box that says let my network see my other connections, because you don't want your company seeing that you're connected to 50 recruiters. So turn that off. And then how do we find recruiters? Several ways of doing it. One, and I think this is right, you may, and the reason that I'm prefacing this or saying it a little tentatively is because LinkedIn's changing every week. They send a new thing. We've changed. We've added this thing. This is no longer. We sent this away. We don't do this anymore. Now we do this. So I don't know. It's very difficult to keep up. But as I understand it, you can go to Advanced Search, the tool at the top of the homepage, and in the industry category, you just select corporate services and then choose staffing and recruiting and put in a keyword. So in this case, for this example, aviation. And then that's going to bring up all of the recruiters and or staffing agencies. I'm a little lazier. I just go to the search box and I click on companies and I put recruiters plus aviation, like a Boolean search. And a lot of times that takes care of it. A third way you could do it is use the list that I'm going to give you, and when it says William Smith is the, you know, deals with all the aviation searches for Battaglia Wilson, well, you just go and you look up William Smith or Battaglia Wilson, William Smith, and then ask him to be a part of your network. Now, there is this little thing with LinkedIn that says, you know, that you can get dinged if you send out too many invitations to people who don't know you and people that you don't know. This, for me, has always been more of a hindrance than anything else because people ask to connect with me constantly, and I'm accepting probably 50 connections a week at this point, and I don't do it anymore. I have my assistant do it, and she goes through, looks at the ones that are legitimate and accepts those invitations. My guess, and I could be wrong, but my guess is I think recruiters probably do the exact same thing because recruiters want to be able to use LinkedIn as part of their CMS system. They want to put things out there. Like, for example, my husband's in the wine industry, and he says, I always remember this one guy, I don't know his name is, Bill Hodgkins, let's say. And Bill is a recruiter, and he every time he has a wine search, he always posts it on his activity board. So every time I open up my LinkedIn profile, because we're networked together, it says, such and such, you know, I need a wine supplier job, VP, Florida, 150-plus, apply through me. And so he just always, this guy's always top of mind. So the moral of the story is, of course, that recruiters want people that are in their industry to be connected to them. It makes sense for you and for them if you are that good candidate that I previously mentioned. So that's the two, three ways to do it. A fourth way to do it is through groups, which is awesome because you can email groups without having to formally invite them, members of the group. So join a couple recruiter groups. Join 50 for all I care. Join as many as you can. I love groups because you really get it. It's like you're getting directly connected to the portal of people that you want or need to know. Now, if you are changing industries, this is obviously not going to apply for recruiters because recruiters aren't really going to be able to help you if you change industries. But if you're changing industries and or you have the type of position where you don't want your company to know that you're looking or connected to a recruiter, then you certainly don't want a recruiter group's icon right there on your profile. So when you sign up for these groups, first of all, I should back up. There are so many good groups, and all you have to do is search for it in the search bar on LinkedIn in the top. And so I think there's a drop-down menu. It says search for, and it'll say, like, people, companies, groups, et cetera, et cetera. So you click on groups, and then you just put finance executives or, you know, aviation or Baltimore, and it will give you this huge list of groups, and you just scroll down. Generally, I like to look for the ones that have a lot of people. If they've only got five people in it, it's probably not going to help you that much. But if it's an open group and they've got, you know, 50,000 members, awesome. So just know some of those groups that are really large like that can be really noisy. There's just a lot of activity going on. So, but find the one you want. Just put recruiters plus aviation or executive recruiters, or top retained recruiters. You can play around with whatever keywords you use based on whatever your particular needs are. And then you start to just go down the list and look at the groups and start joining them. When you join them, there'll be a little bar that comes up across the top, and it'll say, you're now a member of Executive Recruiters Group USA. Click here to change or adjust your group settings. And you want to click there, and then make sure that if it's a stealthy job search you're in or you're just in a passive job search, uncheck the box that says show this icon on my website. You might also look to control the daily digest of emails that you get from that group if you don't want to get slammed with emails. Once you've got all that set up, then get out of there. And now go into that group, look at the jobs, open jobs, look at the discussions, and look at the members. And when you see a member that you want to connect with, I'm pretty sure it's just a click of the button. You can email them and send them a message without, I think LinkedIn has, you know, you can only invite so many people before they charge you if you have a free program. But if you invite someone or want to talk to someone through groups and you, that you're a mutual member of, last time I checked, this was still okay to do, and you could do it for free all day long. So very smart move if you are not looking to move industries. This is something that you can and should do. So the next question was, how much effort should my clients put into building recruiter connections on LinkedIn? If they're in there, if they want to stay in their industries, that is a critical exercise, as far as I'm concerned, to spend, let's say someone says, all right, career management, I'm going to spend 10 minutes a week, 15 minutes a week, going through, looking at the groups, inviting or writing a few emails to people. Hey, I really liked your article. I'd like to join, you know, invite you to join my network on LinkedIn. Or, hey, we're a member of the same group. I'm an aeronautics specialist. I'd like to invite you to join my network on LinkedIn. And the point to my statement about getting dinged by LinkedIn if you send too many emails to people you don't know, I really don't think that's true for recruiters. Call me out if I'm wrong on that, but as far as I'm concerned, I would think recruiters want to connect with as many people in their specialty as possible. It's, you're making their job that much easier. So, and then what element of the LinkedIn profile can be optimized specifically for recruiters and how? Keyword optimization is what I do. A little insider secret there. I pack out the specialty keywords as much as possible. So, for example, let's say that I have a vice president client who wants to up-level to a C-level position. I'm going to have them bring me two or three C-level positions that they're, you know, they're gunning for. And I'm only speaking specifically about LinkedIn right now and sort of stealthily optimizing their profile. Obviously, I can't change that profile to say anything about gunning for a C-level position, and I can't really change that person's information to express that at all. But I can optimize those keywords without making a big noise, right? I mean, because there's not going to be many people scrolling through your specialty keywords looking for, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, that's not in alignment with what he does. I mean, I would think that would just be extremely rare. So I think it's a pretty safe exercise that we can do, and we can embed and integrate some keywords into that section that then will optimize that person so that, again, and it's just my hunch, but I think when recruiters are keyword searching for people like your clients, your job-seeking clients, that that will help them to come up in the search results. So the last question was, what percentage of total time in job search and in general career management mode should be my clients be spending on making recruiter contacts and building those relationships? It really depends on the client. If I, for example, have, I'm trying to think of a good example. If I have someone that is in San Antonio who needs to stay in San Antonio because his family is there, he doesn't want to move his kids out of school, he really wants to keep his, you know, position there, and the guy's just five-star, really good guy, perfect for recruiters. I might say, you know, let's see how many positions we can optimize through connecting to companies in San Antonio through LinkedIn, and how many connections you can make by going direct or becoming more of a thought leader, since we have a little time, in your industry, to see how many opportunities we can pull to you. San Antonio is growing, moving, lots of corporate expansions going on. Why don't we see if we can just strategically connect with those companies that are growing and expanding, saying, hey, do you need a good, you know, COO? Do you need a good VP of operations that, you know, can help take your company to the next level or establish themselves here in San Antonio or whatever? Maybe if we have time, that might make sense before I go to recruiters. And the reason I may do that is because you don't want to double dip. In other words, if I send my resume to 50 top companies in San Antonio, and then I send that client's resume to recruiters, and the recruiter says, well, have you ever contacted USAA before? And the client says, why, yes, just last week I sent them the resume. Then the recruiter's going to throw up their hands and go, ah, because the unspoken rule is if a client already has the candidate's resume, the recruiter can't get paid on that search. So if I think my client is going to have a better advantage of getting their foot in the door by going direct, then I might suggest that to do that first and have the recruiters be a plan B. And maybe some of you are saying, well, why wouldn't you just send it through recruiters then? Well, because not every search gets given to a recruiter. And if I am local and I know a company is moving and expanding, then and that company maybe is expanding into San Antonio, let's say, and that company is going to pay somebody, a recruiter, $30,000 to bring me in, and then maybe another $20,000 to relocate me, and who knows, maybe about a signing bonus. That company could be into me $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 before I even walk in the door, which is okay. But, you know, if I had to step back and look at what the ideal situation would be, it would be, gee, I'd like to kind of control some of this so that I might be able to negotiate some of those monies into my salary package. Or, gee, I'd like to not come in the door with so much pressure on my shoulders to perform because I came in at such a huge price tag. These are subtle things. They're unspoken things, but they can and do happen. They can and do affect. So it really depends on the situation. So hopefully those examples will help you figure out your own situation and decide what you want to do. And, of course, there's an element here that we're not discussing on this call, and that's how do you tap into the hidden job market. And that's going to be my next call. But for this call, this is basically just some of the finer points about working with recruiting firms and the unspoken rules of the game. So let's see. What else have we got here? What kinds of resumes and cover letters do recruiters like to see? They like to see good ones. They like to see resumes that are not packed out with so much text that they can't get satisfied at the cursory glance. They like to see resumes that pretty much parse out all the leadership qualities and areas of expertise in various areas that align you as a candidate with their top positions. So this one area where having a resume writer, investing in yourself by having your resume professionally written, can really pay off with more interviews. It doesn't take, you know, it's no biggie for a resume writer to make you look fantabulous on paper and tell your story. But also a good resume writer understands how the design and layout of a document gets positive attention and makes for good feelings at the cursory glance. Because by setting things up and using keywords and respecting white space and parsing things out in boxes and tables, the recruiter can scan that document and they go, okay, I get it. He's a chief operating officer. He's had P&L to $160 million. He's had oversight for three countries. He's ran teams to 700. You know, these are the things that a recruiter can go, got it. Okay, I understand. Consumer goods, okay. And here are his leadership abilities, and here's where he, you know, he drove revenue. He's turned around flailing divisions before. He's done some really amazing cost control things. And so you can either sort of highlight that by company and show, you know, sort of revenue driving abilities, or you can parse that out by, you know, financial acumen, operations expertise, human resources development, or team, executive team development, and then kind of show two or three accomplishments for each of those line items. It's always nice to design a resume like that because they get it's that real quick snapshot they can get at the cursory glance and go, okay, I got it. That's what gives the good impression. Just to drive this home, I had a construction executive last year I worked with, and the guy was awesome what he did, and he had been sending around his resume for 6 months or so and really angry because he was one of the best in the business. He was sending his resume to people that knew him, and he wasn't getting any interviews. So he was very angry when he called me, and he finally hired me to redo his resume. When he got his resume back, he started sending it all out again. He got 4 interviews in a week and 2 offers, and one of them was for $70,000 more than he was currently making. He couldn't believe it, first of all, that the resume made that kind of impression. But he said he was so excited that I was getting, you know, biweekly reports on how things were going, and I was going so good. And he said, everyone keeps saying the same thing. They say, I see hundreds of resumes cross my desk every month, and yours is the easiest resume to read. He said, to me, that's a surprising comment. Out of all the things they could say, they're saying, I just can see so quickly and so easily what it is that you do and your area of expertise. You know, it's so nice to read a resume that is so well organized. He says, people just can't stop saying that. So I think it sort of makes an argument about, and I think recruiters are the same. You know, and generally recruiters want to look through it and they want to go right to your they like chronological resumes because they go right to your job history and they're looking for those things that I previously mentioned, you know, the 3 jobs in less than 10 years and where you've been and what the position was. They're trying to play very, you know, sort of generic Rubik's Cube or connect the dots, you know. Is this person good for anything I have? Quick, you know, let me try to figure it out. And so the easier you can make their job, and of course the more impressive you look on paper, the more impressed they're going to be with you. Cover letters. I send very, very, very short cover letters. And of course, the one side of that is they're hard to write because the less words you use, the harder it is to write, interestingly enough. And the other thing is they get read. They get read because they're short. So I find, you know, is one of your companies looking for a good director of operations? As a director for a $100 million consumer goods company, I recently drove revenue $10 million in under 6 months. Here's a few other accomplishments. Boom, boom, boom. If you're interested, let's talk. Or I'll follow up with a phone call. And then I'll generally give a salary range. And people say, oh, I can't believe you do that because you're never supposed to mention money. Absolutely. But you can mention money in broad terms, and that's even safer because if you mention it in broad terms, that oftentimes exempts you from having to get very exacting about what you're making. So if you say, I've been in the low 6 figures for the last 5 or 7 years, I've been in the last few years, I've been anywhere between 50 and 150. In the last 7 years, I've been, you know, over 200 or between 2 and 500. And if a lot of times you look at your salary and you say, okay, 5 years ago I was here, this was my base and this was my benefits, so I was between 50 and 70. And then here now I'm at 85 and, you know, I'm probably at 105 with all my benefits. That's a big jump. I bet you didn't, you know, a lot of times we don't all think about that. You know, I've been between 50 and 100 grand. So you could say I've been in the high 5, low 6 figures for the last 5 years. And then you can ask them a question. Since we're on the subject, do you have a range in mind for this position? Or has your, you know, does your client company have a bonus for this? Does your client company have a budget in range or in mind for this particular position? Or, you know, I've been in the low 6 figures for the last few years. Do any of your searches fall in that range anywhere? So the reason why it's important, and recruiters can be very rude, you know, and they can be rude because if they've done it enough years, they don't have time. And I find there's two kind of recruiters, the kind that don't have time and don't want to talk on the phone a lot. That was me. And this funny segment of the recruiting world that loves to talk a lot. They will talk your ear off. They will be your best friend. They're, I don't know, chronic talkers. They love to talk, and you can't get them off the phone. That's when they do that all day long, and they're really good at what they do, and they're good at building relationships, and they use that to their advantage. So sometimes recruiters either will be, you know, kind of aggravating or off-putting. So pick your poison, but don't take offense, because really they talk to a ton of people, and it's just sort of, I think, a symptom of their business that they're in. So try not to be offended. Just, you know, when they ask you questions that sound a little bit, you know, abrasive or provocative, just say, well, oh, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I understand. It's no problem. And if they say, well, how much do you make? Well, how much did you make in your last job? You know, you could say, well, really, I mean, seriously, for the last few years, I really have been in the low six figures, and I'm open to entertaining anything in the, you know, in that realm, anything between 100 and 300,000. Now, sometimes you might get into sticky situations. They ask for your W-2, they ask for exact numbers, and really, if you can, just try to get out of it. You know, try, and it's amazing how easy, and I'm not saying it's bad, because I need to know, but if I'm talking to someone over the phone, I say, well, how much are you making now, and where do you want to be? And it doesn't miss a beat. People will just tell me, well, I've been at 180, and I'd like to be at 225. And that's okay to tell me, it's no problem, but I would never tell a recruiter that, because the recruiter is going to repeat that verbatim to their client. Guy's been at 180, he'd like to be at 225. Now, if you get 225, great, but you may have been able to get 250 or 3. So, and the other thing, too, is that when we sort of, we blurt out money numbers, that becomes psychologically a touchstone. And it's harder when you give away a number too soon to get them off that in their mind, to detach them from that figure of associating you with that number and get them thinking about the value, because that's where really people make big jumps in salary, is when they sell their value. My friend Mark Hovind, and I repeat this constantly, he used to say, I turn lead into gold, but I, you know, have a third grade education, and I wake up at 12 every day, and I am bald and fat and ugly, and I have no friends, but I turn lead into gold. Do you want some money? And I think that that's really meaningful, you know, in that it just goes to show that we really have to stick to the value of what we do first. No one cares that I write resumes. Everybody cares about, well, what will happen when you write my resume. So when I have my conversations with potential clients on the phone, that's what I talk about. Here's what happens. Here's what happens to my other clients when I write their resumes. And here's a solution. Here's how you want to play that out. How I write resumes is always at the bottom of the list, even though that's what I do. So harder to keep the conversation on value when we blurt out the money. So we never want to say anything about money. We never want to give exact figures. You have to give them some figure, because they won't tolerate it if you don't. But try to give them a range. I've been between 50 and 100. I've been between 2 and 400. I've been between 3 and 500. You know, and if they ask, say, well, I wouldn't accept anything below 3, but really I'm flexible because I'm willing to take some risk on the back end. So I'd like to explore opportunities between 3 and 500 salary-wise. And since we're on the subject, so you're taking control, but you're also giving them what they want. And since we're on the subject, do you have any searches that are, you know, fall in that range that I might be a fit for? That's how to get them on working with you and kind of slipping through under the radar with some of these that they're really, really wanting you to give them exact figures. Now, sometimes it doesn't work, and that's okay, you know, but this is all my best stuff that's going to help you hopefully get out from under some of these conversations. You never want to say to recruiters, can you get me a job? They don't work for you, you know. You never want to say to recruiters, I can do anything, I'm flexible, I'm open to options. Three statements to strike off of your list forever and ever, because recruiters are expecting you to come to the table saying, I know who I am, I know what my value is, and here's what I want to be when I, you know, here's what I do, and here's what I'd like to have happen, and here's my value that I offer. Anything that sort of it puts it on them, like, can you find me a job? Here's all my skills. I'm really awesome. Can you find me a job? Is there anything you have? You know, I'm open. I'm flexible. I can do a lot. I've done a lot already. I've been this. It's not their job to figure out what you should be doing. It's really incumbent upon you to be much more direct and say, I can do this, and I'm vetting roles currently that are this, and I'm also vetting this and this. And I'm reaching out to you because I know you're one of the best in the industry. Your firm is very well known and respected. Or I'm reaching out to you because I did some research. I saw that you specialize in the aerospace industry, and I wanted to connect with you confidentially. So everything's controlled. You're in charge. That's the tone, the spirit in which you want to embrace your extensions to them. Now, I want to finalize by just, and I realize I've gone slightly over time, but I want to establish some tips about how you can develop beneficial long-term relationships with recruiters and how it can help you and your network grow and thrive. It's always better to be proactive overall in your career versus reactive. I work with job seekers all the time, top executives, people that have just done amazing things, that make lots of money in their careers, that are in reactive situations. They feel out of control. It's very difficult to be in a job search where you feel out of control. So anything you can do in terms of career management mentally to understand that you really have a lot of power and control over what happens. It doesn't have to be reactive, especially today with the internet. Information's just abound, you know, so we are abundant. So we all have the opportunity to take much more control as long as we know how to do that. So finding recruiters that are in your industry that can help you, you know, getting is really on par with getting involved in associations and developing your thought leadership or expert status. Reaching out to them and saying, look, I'm not looking now, but I'm in such and such industry. I'm even happy to give you my resume, but I wanted you to know that I'm happy to help you with your searches, and I'm looking to establish a few good relationships with some recruiters in hopes that maybe I can connect you with some key players or some superstars, and, you know, maybe every once in a while you can pitch me a job or two. I think that's fine to say to a recruiter. So if you got a, let's say five. How about five recruiting firms? Or maybe 10, or maybe it's 20. Why not? And every once in a while, they can call you and say, hey, I'm looking for a good vice president of technology for an aerospace company in Virginia. Do you know of anyone? You can say, you know, I know a lady. She's awesome. And why don't you give her a call? And you can tell her I called. I don't know if she's looking or not. My friend just called me and said that they were open. They sounded like maybe they were ready to make a move. I don't know if they've done anything, but let me pass you on your number to them. These are very worthwhile opportunities. I love power brokering. I think it's so much fun when I know two people that can help each other to put them together. It's very satisfying. I do it all the time. Just this morning, I put my gate guy, my interior decorator, and a big real estate developer in town together. I said, you guys are awesome for each other. Here you go. I gave everybody else's number. So I try to do it with everything because I think it's just goodwill. You're establishing goodwill. There was a recruiter that I used to help. This is how I got into this industry in the first place. I was a marketing manager for a architectural company, a systems engineering company in Orlando, and I used to get a call from this construction recruiter named Gary all the time. Do you know anybody? Because we used to go to the same events and stuff, and I was always nice to him because I was in marketing. You have to be nice to everybody. And I said, sure, Gary, how about this person? Oh, have you called this person? I just liked all that hustling, you know. And so I got fired from that job for cutting some crossfire that was going higher up, and they were closing the office, and so I was let go. And Gary called me one day, and he said, oh, I need someone for that. I said, Gary, I'd love to help you, but I'm packing up my office. I'm sorry. I just lost my job. This thing happened. He said, oh, my God. Well, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. I think I'm going to move to Nashville, which I did. And he said, that's great. Do you want to work for me? And I said, how am I going to work for you? You live in Tampa. He said, you can open up an office for me in Nashville. He said, you'd make a great recruiter. You're perfect for it. You have all the skills. You're always doing things, putting people together. I said, really? And he said, yeah. And so that's how – now that's totally reactive. I mean, I couldn't have planned that less. But Gary saw an opportunity there, and he pulled me in and he trained me, and then I opened up an office for him in Nashville, and then I bought the division from him a year later. And that was in the 90s. When it seems like yesterday, but that's when everything started for me. And so that was an example of a recruiter that actually hired me to do recruiting for them, and how I got my start. But I guess the moral of the story is, if we help connect the dots with other people, then other people are going to be more open to reciprocating when it's, you know, when your turn comes up. But even more importantly, you're going to be top of mind as a professional who is caring and has virtue and is gracious, that they're going to be thinking of for their best searches, because you're going to be helpful for them. You've already built a relationship with them. They're going to say, "How's it going at your company?" You're going to say, "Awesome. I just did this thing. I just drove this revenue. We just saved $1 million in cost in such and such division. Everything's going great. Thanks for asking. How about you?" Those conversations are worthy to have. Some people get really scared to have relationships with recruiters. I used to have people hang up on me when I would pitch jobs as a recruiter. You know, you think we're trying to get recruiters to talk to us. Sometimes recruiters can't talk to candidates. And I always used to say, you know, marvel, because they would say, "I'm not looking, I'm really happy," click. And then a year later, the same guy would call me, "Oh, I got laid off," or, "Now I'm looking." I'm going, "Well, you know how you treated me last year? If you did that to me, I'm not going to bring you into any of my client companies I, drew blood to get, because they were the best companies, and now I'm trying to recruit the best candidates, because I just would never recruit someone that behaved like that." Now, granted, sometimes people get scared because they think their company is secretly checking to see if they'll talk to recruiters. There's nothing wrong with saying, "You know, I'm totally happy at my position, but I'm all about networking, and if you have someone, a search you need someone for, keep me in mind. You can email me from time to time. I'm happy to help you." To me, that's the smartest thing anybody could do. And if it is your company on the other end of the line, are they going to think that that's a red flag? I don't think so. They might promote you. So that's... really the big secret to how to work with these guys, how to how to build long-term relationships that are going to benefit you. And even if your turn does come up and they don't help you, I still think consistent operating in the right direction, doing the right thing at the right times, will bring the best overall results to you. So it doesn't work perfectly all the time. It just works enough to say, out of all the things you could do, I think these are the right things. So how to establish, give them good leads, give the recruiters good leads, make sure they're actually good when you can, authentic. And if you don't have anything, just say, "I don't have anything right now," feel free to ask me again. If I think of anyone, I'll let you know. Help your friends in your industry connect the dots to those recruiters too. "Hey, I'm having Mary call you," or, "Mary, connect with my, Bill, he's a recruiter out of Philly. I think, it would be good if he had your resume." Give them your updated resume. Take their calls. Say, "Look, I'm not in a search now, but I'll give this to you for those golden egg opportunities, or just in case, once you've established their credibility with you." And tell them you're open to helping them. And long-term, this is going to have tremendous payoff for you. But again, all this falls under, if you're staying in your industry, if you're building your career in your industry, these are really must-dos. So I hope this has been helpful, everybody, and that it gives you a good starting point. When we finish up the call, there's going to be a call that this audio is going to be available, as well as the recruiter list that I promise you, and a checklist of all of the things that we've talked about today. And we'll send you the link to that page so you can download and keep everything. Okay, guys, thank you so much, and good luck, and I hope that this has been helpful for you. Good night.